You have done everything right. Thorough weather briefing, flight plan filed, pre-flighted the airplane like it owed you money. Visibility unrestricted, winds light and variable. A beautiful afternoon cross-country in front of you. Life is good. Then your radio crackles. Not a traffic call, not a routine frequency change. It is a controller with an urgent tone you have never heard before, and within moments you realize there is a military aircraft off your wing, and they did not come out here to admire the scenery. That scenario is not fiction. It has happened, more than once. A general aviation pilot on an otherwise routine cross-country, a temporary flight restriction they did not catch in the briefing. And suddenly there is a fighter on their wing working through intercept procedures that most pilots have never drilled. I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, right here on Radio Hangar. Today we are talking about temporary flight restrictions. What they are, where they come from, how to find them, and how to make sure checking for them becomes as automatic as checking fuel before every cross-country. Because the FAA is not going to send you a calendar reminder when they put one across your route. Before we get into it, quick shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of this journey. First solo, private pilot, instrument, commercial. There is a coin for each milestone, and it is a great way to mark what you have actually earned. AviationSoul.com. All right, let's walk through this together. A temporary flight restriction is a restriction on flight in a defined volume of airspace for a defined period of time. The Federal Aviation Administration issues them under several sections of Federal Aviation Regulation Part 91, specifically sections 9137 through 91.145, and each section covers a different situation. Understanding the categories helps you know what to look for and why it matters. The first category is what most pilots picture when they hear TFR, Hazard and Disaster Restrictions, issued under Section 9137. If there's a wildfire burning in the western states, a chemical spill, a search and rescue operation, or a natural disaster requiring coordinated aerial response, the FAA will place a restriction around that area. The primary reason is to protect the people working up there. Air tankers and aerial firefighting helicopters operate at low altitudes, often in degraded visibility from smoke, in terrain that demands every bit of crew attention. A sightseeing pilot drifting through that environment is not just a risk to themselves. They are a hazard to a tanker pilot trying to do a low-level drop in extremely challenging conditions. Wildfire TFRs can appear quickly. You might file a flight plan on a clear morning in the Pacific Northwest or the Southwest, do a complete briefing, and find a restriction sitting right across your route by the time you reach cruise altitude because a fire started while you were taxiing. This is one of several reasons why checking NOTAMs immediately before departure, not just during early planning, is non-negotiable. The second type is the one that generates the most enforcement actions in general aviation. The VIP temporary flight restriction, issued under Section 9141, this is what everyone refers to as the presidential bubble. When the President of the United States travels, a temporary flight restriction moves with them. It is not attached to Washington, D.C., it is not fixed to any single location, it follows. Air Force One lands in Denver, the bubble is over Denver. Marine One makes a trip to a coastal retreat, the bubble goes with it. The presidential TFR is typically published as two concentric areas. Dimensions vary by specific NOTAM, but a common configuration includes an inner no-fly zone of roughly 10 nautical miles radius where general aviation flight simply is not permitted without explicit authorization from air traffic control, and an outer ring extending out to around 30 nautical miles where flight is allowed but comes with conditions. Inside that outer ring, you are generally expected to be on an active flight plan, in two-way radio contact with air traffic control, and squawking a discrete transponder code assigned by approach or center. Not just flight following in the casual sense. Actual established two-way contact with someone who has you on radar and knows exactly where you are. Here is the piece that catches pilots off guard. The presidential TFR can appear with less notice than you might expect. When the schedule changes, the NOTAM changes. If Air Force One diverts, the restriction follows. If a state visit or campaign stop gets added to the schedule at short notice, a restriction goes up. The timing is driven by the movement, not by your planning timeline. This means a briefing you completed 3 hours before departure may not reflect what is active when you reach the airspace. The practical takeaway is simple but worth saying out loud. Do a fresh NOTAM check as close to your actual departure as possible. Not the night before, not the morning of a midday flight, right before you untie the airplane. The third category I want to spend time on is one that surprises students doing cross-countries around major metropolitan areas, stadium TFRs, issued under Section 91.145. The rule is this: for any major league sporting event or any event where more than 30,000 attendees are expected, the FAA places a 3-nautical-mile radius, 3,000 feet above ground level restriction around that venue. It activates 1 hour before the scheduled event and stays in place for 1 hour after it ends. Think about what that means on a cross-country across the Midwest or the Northeast on a Sunday afternoon. There are football games, baseball games, soccer matches happening in cities all along your route. A stadium you do not even realize is there, buried somewhere beneath your flight path, has a little red circle around it that applies to you. These restrictions are small in size but real in consequences, and the FAA does take action when pilots enter them without authorization. The fix for stadiums is genuinely simple. Before you fly on a weekend, spend 2 minutes looking at what major games are scheduled in cities near your route. It is not a burdensome step. It is just information you need. Now let's talk about how you actually find all of this, because there are several tools and each one has a role. The FAA maintains an active TFR display that you can reach through their website. Search for FAA TFR and you will find a map-based tool showing current and near-future restrictions across the country. This is the authoritative source. It is worth bookmarking. Your standard pre-flight weather briefing through 1800wxbrief.com will include TFR information in the NOTAM section. If you're getting a standard briefing through that system, the TFRs should appear there. The historically challenging part of this has been NOTAM formatting. The FAA has made improvements in recent years to make NOTAMs more readable, but they still require careful attention. Do not skim the NOTAM section of your briefing. Look specifically for what are called FDC NOTAMs. FDC stands for Flight Data Center, and FDC NOTAMs are where the FAA publishes regulatory airspace notices, including temporary flight restrictions. When you see a NOTAM that begins with that label, slow down and read the whole thing. Most pilots flying cross-country today are using an electronic flight bag application, 4Flight, Garmin Pilot, something along those lines. These apps layer active TFRs directly on the moving map during flight. That is enormously helpful. But there is a specific limitation worth understanding. The app shows you restrictions that exist at the time of your last data sync. If a new TFR appears after your last sync, the app may not have it yet. Real-time data connectivity mitigates this, but it does not eliminate the need for that final briefing check before departure. The app is a great cross-check and a fantastic situational awareness tool in flight. It is not a substitute for the authoritative briefing. SkyVector.com is another planning resource that overlays TFRs on a sectional chart view. Useful for the planning phase when you're mapping out your route and want to see the airspace picture before you commit to a corridor. Now I want to be direct about consequences, because understanding what happens when pilots bust TFRs is part of what should make checking feel non-optional. For minor TFR violations, the FAA may contact you by letter, request a written explanation, and initiate a pilot deviation report. Depending on circumstances, that can result in enforcement action against your certificate, retraining requirements, or civil penalties. For security-related TFRs, including VIP and presidential restrictions, the response is faster and more serious. Certificate suspension and revocation are on the table. Civil penalties can be significant. And for presidential TFRs in particular, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, which is NORAD, maintains active coordination with the FAA to identify and respond to aircraft that enter restricted airspace around the president. Fighter intercepts of general aviation aircraft have occurred in the United States. The pilots involved were not reckless people. Many of them simply did not know the restriction was there because they did not have a current briefing. The intercept procedure, if it ever happens to you, is covered in the Aeronautical Information Manual. The intercepting aircraft will approach and rock its wings, then maneuver ahead of you and signal you to follow. The standard response is to rock your own wings to acknowledge and follow the military aircraft. Squawking 7700 on your transponder also signals distress and will get immediate attention. Knowing these procedures is not paranoia. It is part of being a cross-country pilot who has thought through scenarios that most days you will never encounter. But on one day might matter enormously. Here's something I wish someone had walked me through more clearly early in my training. There is a difference between VFR airspace rules and TFR rules that pilots sometimes conflate. You might be legally VFR. You might be below any charted airspace floor. You might feel perfectly clear of any controlled airspace. None of that exempts you from a TFR. TFRs are overlaid on top of all of it. They apply regardless of your altitude, your flight rules, or whether you're in communication with anyone. The only way to know if a TFR is in your path is to check. Let me give you the planning workflow I recommend building into every cross-country, not just the complicated ones. Start your route planning on a tool that shows TFRs layered on the chart. Note anything within about 30 to 40 miles of your intended route. Flag any stadiums, any areas where you're aware of political travel, any regions where fire or disaster news has been active in recent days. Do your full standard weather briefing. Within that briefing, specifically read through the FTC NOTAM section. Read it carefully, make a note of anything that puts a restriction near your route. Then, right before you start the engine, do a final TFR check. This is the step that feels redundant and is not. An hour of time between your briefing and your departure is enough for a presidential schedule to shift, a fire to start, or a new restriction to go up. 2 minutes before engine start is worth the habit. If you are filing an instrument flight rules flight plan, your clearance routing may keep you away from TFRs automatically because air traffic control will route you around them. But knowing what is out there makes you a better communicator and a more situationally aware pilot, even in the instrument environment. The Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Certificate address cross-country planning in some detail, and NOTAM interpretation is part of what a designated pilot examiner will probe during the oral examination. Here is what I have seen in check ride prep. Students who can recite categories of airspace from memory, but who, when handed an actual NOTAM briefing printout and asked to find potential issues, have never really had to do it under any pressure. The examiner is not looking for you to recite the section numbers. They are looking for evidence that you actually read these things, that you know what an FDC NOTAM looks like, and that you understand what happens if you miss one. Practice it on your training flights. After you land, pull out the briefing printout and go back through the NOTAM section. Get comfortable with the format. It is a skill that develops with repetition, and the check ride is the wrong place to be doing it for the first time under a time constraint. A couple of final notes. If your cross-country takes you anywhere near Washington, D.C., you are operating in or adjacent to the D.C. Special Flight Rules area. This is not a TFR. It is a permanent airspace structure with its own rules and procedures, distinct from anything that gets published as a temporary restriction. The Aeronautical Information Manual covers the DC Special Flight Rules area procedures thoroughly. If your route goes near it, a dedicated study session on those requirements is worth your time before you go. And one thing that is always available to you if you are ever uncertain, ask. If you're already talking to a controller on a cross-country approach, are there any TFRs or restrictions I should be aware of along my route is a completely legitimate question. Controllers deal with pilots navigating the system every day. The radio exists precisely for moments when you need information you do not have. Information from the Aeronautical Information Manual and the FAA's NOTAM system forms the backbone of today's show. You can find more at radiohangar.com. Check those NOTAMs. I'm Pattern. Safe flying.